It's a NewsBuzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Coming up in our second half hour, new research on nonstick pans may make you think twice before using them. But first, the spread of avian flu continues. The virus, known by the strain name H5N2, has now been confirmed in at least 15 states. It's been detected at over 170 farms. More than 38 million turkeys and chickens are being euthanized in efforts to try to stop the spread of this virus. Iowa, being one of the top producers for eggs in the country, has so far been hardest hit. Joining me now with an update, his perspective, Iowa's Secretary of Agriculture, Bill Northey. Secretary Northey, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Ben. Good to be on.
Tell us, how many birds have been euthanized in Iowa so far? Give us the length and breadth of what's going on right now.
Well, we have about a little over 60 farms in Iowa that have been impacted so far, and on those farms, there are about 22, almost 23 million layers, so egg-laying chickens. We have about 3 million as well that are pullets, that were chickens that are planned to be layers. So about 25, 26 million on the chicken side, about a million turkeys as well. The turkey farms are much smaller. Most all those turkeys have been put down. The chickens, we're in the 70 to 80% range of those birds that have been put down as well. We still have a few to depopulate, but when we're all done, we'll be well north of that 25 million number.
Mm-hmm. How confident are you that we now have a handle on this epidemic? Is it still spreading?
You know, we're still seeing some new cases. We saw some new cases this week, but we're seeing fewer cases. And we're not seeing the big numbers that we once were seeing. Now, again, that could change overnight. We could end up with stuff over the weekend and come back next week and have our plates back full again. But about 2 weeks ago, we ended up with 22 cases in a week. This week, you know, we're working on that. That we do feel like that it's peaking, but we're certainly not making projections about how long it's going to take or when it's going to stop.
Mm-hmm. What are the latest numbers released this week?
Well, we're up to 63 cases. We announced a turkey flock on Thursday. So we're about half turkey flocks, half chicken flocks. These turkey flocks are often the smaller operations, but certainly it all adds up, and we have a lot of producers out there that are impacted.
Mm-hmm. So tens of millions of birds being euthanized here. What is happening to all these dead birds?
So several different things. We're looking at each of the options. In some cases, we have some folks that have land available and can safely bury these birds near the farm. In that case, the DNR makes sure that the water table is not a problem, that it's so shallow that it would cause a problem with water. It's got to be away from our other water bodies as well, if there's a stream nearby or any other way for that buried material to cause a problem in something else. So that's certainly one of the ways. We have a lot that are out there that are composted. So most of the turkeys are composted in the barns themselves. There's actually a foam that is put on the turkeys that causes the turkeys to be euthanized there, and they are piled and composted with carbon, often wood chips, maybe corn stalks, within the barn itself, and that'll be in the barn, and it heats up and it kills the disease. Later that, once the disease is out of that compost, then that'll be safely be able to spread on the field. We have a couple small incinerators running up in northwest Iowa, and hopefully by this weekend, a larger incinerator that would be running. And they heat these birds up until they come out as almost an ash material, but certainly heat well beyond the level of destroying the disease. And then we're likely to be able to see some go to some landfills as well. We've had several landfills this week that have said that they're They believe they can take them safely or are interested in taking them safely and have looked at the whole process for what's required by these landfills. They've got to be our larger, they've got to be our modern landfills with liners in them. They've got to be able to handle the bags that these birds come in a way that safely keeps those bags sealed. And so we're likely to see that be one of those options that starts to get used here over the weekend or early next week.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like, of course, the incineration and the composting takes care of the virus, kills it. Are you confident that the burying and the landfilling will do away with the virus? Are you worried that the virus may be underground and who knows how long it could live?
Yeah, USDA has done a lot of research in how this virus actually lives in these animals, and it needs live animals to be able to continue to live. They say even an expired bird in a facility after 30 days or sometimes a shorter period of time, that bird doesn't have the disease, even if it's not been treated in any way. And so they've done studies to look at burying, to look at landfills. In fact, these plastic boxes, we call them bio bags, that these birds would go into to travel to landfills. Those birds will be in there for likely at least a few days, maybe a few weeks. And as USDA studies will say, that by itself will cause the virus to have been gone completely from that bio bag even before it gets to the landfill. And then they've done landfill studies as well. The disease just is not a super strong virus. A little bit of heat, certainly some time away from the bird, and that virus goes away very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the origins of this strain H5N2 here in Iowa. There were three cases confirmed in Wright County when this was first detected in Iowa. That was the first time there was a declared state of emergency, closing roads, trying to hold off the spread of the virus. Looking back, was that effective?
Well, I think nothing by itself has been completely effective because we're at 63 cases now. And so as we look at how it's moved and how we've seen new cases pop up, it really suggests that it's moving lots of different ways. And so everybody's looking for any way to minimize the chance that it moves. So we know that it got here by wild birds. Wild birds don't get sick, but they can carry it and transfer it to turkeys and chickens, and when they do, turkeys and chickens are very, very susceptible to it. And whatever kind of facility they're in, from backyard chickens to small operations to we have some cage-free operations that have been impacted to large commercial operations, those birds get very sick very quick, and we're able to find it right away, but we need to be able to put those facilities down. We also think that it can be transferred potentially on shoes or on tires of vehicles. We think it can move potentially through dust or dander that would come off a farm. It's more likely to live in damp, cool weather because the heat creates a less time that virus is able to live outside the bird. It also dries up any of those kind of water particles that virus may be in. So there are steps that can help reduce the ability of it to move, and folks are really trying to take every step, and that's why I think we've had some folks look at closing roads and doing other kinds of things. Nothing's been proven to be universally to keep it out, but certainly we've seen, we still see some farms in amongst the farms that have had a lot of positive, or the counties that have a lot of positive cases that still remain negative in some of those counties.
Mm-hmm. So you've got some mysteries. You've said potentially several times, and now you've named some farms that you would think would have it that don't have it. It says to me, and I'm sure to you, that there's a mystery here, that we don't have the entire profile of this strain, H5N2.
We don't, and USDA is working on it. They're doing epidemiological studies. They have a team of, I think, 8 to 10 folks here in Iowa that have been going around pulling samples, doing surveys, talking to folks. What kinds of biosecurity did you use? How do you think it might have gotten there? Which barn got it first? And so they've been looking at things here. There's been a lot of work done in Minnesota as well to look at how it moved in that turkey population. Minnesota ended up with, I think, about 90 cases, an awful lot of cases, but less birds because of a lot of turkey operations. So more turkeys than ours, but less total number of birds. But there was, they're hoping to be able to learn more about how it moved by looking at both of these cases and understanding and doing even the signature of the virus itself so they can tell where that virus might have come from. Did it come last from a chicken or did it come last from waterfowl? And they're able to do some of that studying that would give some clues.
I wonder what steps will the Iowa Department of Agriculture and Land Stewardship IDALS take, along with the State Veterinarian's Office, take to review and possibly improve biosecurity regulations once this outbreak recedes?
You know, I think there's going to be a lot of conversation with USDA, our folks that have been in the field, and with the industry as well. We've been on the phone to lots of growers that had the disease, growers that didn't have the disease. They're talking about what kinds of things that they're implementing on their farms. You know, this biosecurity that they all had was just fine 6 weeks ago, but it wasn't challenged the same way with this disease as been challenged before. And so everybody's looking to say, okay, how else could it get onto my farm? What do I need to do? Some folks are looking at adding shower-in, shower-out facilities, even though we had a few cases where they already had those facilities and it broke. They're limiting traffic onto their farm, maybe feeding, maybe pulling a feed truck that just lives on that farm and filling that off a feed truck from off the farm rather than allowing a feed truck from another site coming onto the farm. So lots of different pieces. They're looking at entry points into barns. I heard somebody say yesterday as we talked to them on the phone that they used to have multiple doors within a facility that people would come into. And they say what they've done is they've locked all those doors other than to be able to get out of the facility and just allow people to come in through one door where they have several foot baths, they require changing of clothes, and they go through a disinfection process that would cause that disease, they believe, to likely be neutralized before folks can enter into that facility.
Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Bill Northey with me. You will remember Secretary Northey, as will certainly hog producers in the state, the porcine epidemic diarrhea virus of mostly last year containing that infectious disease. Are there lessons that were transferred from that to this? Any connection?
You know, I think there are. It's obviously a different virus, different species, and buildings are structured different. But as you point out, Ben, I mean, there were some parallels here that some of the folks in the hog industry would say that they had really good biosecurity, but they needed to even have better biosecurity because of the way that disease and the way it transferred challenged their biosecurity. And I hear the poultry folks saying the same thing, that there's going to be a new normal in how they implement their biosecurity on the farm. They're not about rehashing the way it used to be. They're about trying to figure out what it needs to be. And any way of improving on the farm would also make them better at keeping other diseases out too. But I think, you know, biosecurity is not inexpensive. It requires more time before a person can get in and do the work that they want to do, maybe more equipment, certainly disinfection and other kinds of things, maybe some additional facilities. But the pork folks that manage their way through that will say that you know, figuring those lessons out is going to be beneficial for the long term. And the folks that are able to look ahead will say the same thing is probably true on the poultry side right now as well.
What are the latest measures? Are there any new measures, Secretary Northey, that are being taken because of the avian flu spread?
Yeah, we just announced that we're going to not allow county fairs and state fairs to have their poultry expositions and their shows. There's some swap meets and some other smaller events like that as well that we're going to say that should not be held here in the rest of 2015. And we believe that it's just too much risk right now in bringing a bunch of poultry producers together and their birds as well, that if the disease is out there, that it could be spread easily around the farms.
Okay, so an Iowa State Fair in 2015 without any poultry.
Without poultry, isn't that something? Well, we're sure looking forward to having it back in 2016 and being on the other side of it. We know some folks will miss that. That's something that they're either bringing as projects or especially go to the fair to see, because maybe they had projects or grew up with it. So we're disappointed that we need to do this. I think everybody understands why it's so important to do.
I know you get this question a lot, and it's hard to answer. Can you give us any sort of details or response on the economic impact of this outbreak of avian flu?
You know, it is hard to guess. You could look at the numbers, and you can say 26 million chickens and or 24 million, 25 million chickens and look at it and count the value of those chickens, but the cost is way more than that. The cost is the loss of the eggs. You know, that's over a third of the chickens that are laying eggs in Iowa. And we have the largest industry by far compared to other states. And for some people it's 100% of their chickens. Others, we still have 60% of the industry that's out there and still running. It's costing them some money for the extra biosecurity and the fear that they have at night, but they're still able to run. So the cost is big in the short term. Some of these folks will be out of those facilities for months. Some project it could be more than a year before they're back up and going. I also think there's probably a long-term impact, too. Talking to a grower the other day, and he talked about how we're going to go through a period of time here, at least on the processed egg side, where we're going to be short of supply. We're just not going to have as much as what we did, and some of these food companies are going to look to reformulate their baking products or other kinds of things that where they use eggs, reformulate eggs at least to a lower degree, so that they can get through this time of short supply. And that sets up a challenge even when all our folks get back, if all our folks get back into business, how long does it take to build that business back again? So mm-hmm. I think there's a long-term impact, not just about putting chickens back in barns and finally getting up and going, but there's probably a long-term market recovery impact to create that demand again, since we've probably done some damage in the short term here to that demand. So it'll be a challenge and maybe even some restructuring of the industry. Maybe I've heard folks talk about smaller size facilities rather than larger. Not that they've been any less likely to go positive, but at least you lose less birds at a time if they do. So a lot of things are being talked about, and I think there certainly are some long-term impacts.
Interesting. You said if they get back into business, do you know of growers who are being driven out, have been driven out of business by this epidemic?
You know, I don't yet, Ben. I know that we've got a lot of folks that will spend many months without income here. The cost, most of the costs of depopulating that flock and disposing of that flock are covered in the indemnity program that USDA has that's designed to prevent the disease from spreading. So those birds need to be put down humanely and then put down in a way that the disease does not spread. But not all the cost, and certainly not the lost income. And I don't know what people's balance sheets are. Everyone I've talked to has talked about when they get back in, but this has got to really hurt some finances for some folks. Hopefully those facilities will be back. Hopefully everybody will be back. A lot of stress out there, and even, I think, as we talked about earlier, stress for the folks that don't have it. There's a lot of fear that they could get it. And they're doing a lot of things on their own farm, even if they're not positive yet, that is causing them to be stressed and additional costs on their farm to get through this case.
Do the poultry producers, the egg producers, have any sort of crop insurance type of safety net usually?
You know, generally not. They don't have much around animal health. The pork producers didn't around the PED virus. It's a really hard thing to write in for any company. And if you look at the millions of dollars lost here without knowing that something like this was coming, it's hard for an insurance company to get the right amount of income from insurance policies to pay for these kinds of losses. But I know there's some folks that are thinking about it, and whether that's some sort of a government-backed policy that helps through an emergency like this, but farmers pay a good share of the premium for it. There's folks that are looking, but nothing that's been in place that would help people through this situation.
But even though you haven't heard of anyone being driven out of business, you would not be surprised to hear of Iowa growers going out of business saying, that's it, I've had enough, I can't sustain this.
I certainly could imagine that happens, and maybe they're able to, you know, somebody else is able to use those facilities to start up. Maybe the cost of getting those facilities back going again exceed the income that they think they're going to get off of that. Or maybe they're just at the time of life that they were thinking about retiring sometimes in the next 5 years and decide this was the time to do it. So this is a huge impact to folks. And these kinds of impacts are unlikely to pass without some folks deciding that it's just too much to get ramped back up again.
Briefly, before we have to say goodbye, Secretary Northey, in your position, I wonder, as Secretary of Agriculture, experiencing this, trying to contain this epidemic, what do you see as the most troublesome aspect of what we have experienced?
You know, it's just really hard to watch the producers and all the folks closely connected with this have to go through this kind of stress. Your heart just breaks for the folks that are going through it.
Iowa Secretary of Agriculture Bill Northey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ben.
Coming up in just a moment, we'll continue talking about the avian flu outbreak. We'll talk with Michael Osterholm, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota. We'll ask him what we know about this virus and what we don't know. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, a NewsBuzz edition. Stay with us.